Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Lonely TARDIS, your journey through time lords and space, where we discuss all things Doctor Who. This week, we'll be chatting about Mummy on the Orient Express. I'm Dolly Domofsky, one of your gracious hosts. Joining me, as usual, Stephen Strum.
Hello.
Sean Norton.
Hi.
And Marcus Beer.
Are you my mummy?
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
We've actually got a great show planned today. And by that, I mean we're going to be talking about one of my favorite episodes of the season. So that in thereby, it will be a great episode, I'm sure. Mummy on the Orient Express was this week's Doctor Who. And there's a lot to say about this episode, and I'm going to jump into a brief synopsis. Doctor and Clara somehow are not fighting anymore or are still fighting, and they show up on the Orient Express. We'll cover all this in more detail momentarily. Show up on the Orient Express. Doctor decides to take her there, where somehow a mummy, aka the Foretold, is killing passengers, giving them 66 seconds to survive after they see it. By the end, the Doctor figures out that the mummy used to be a soldier looking for easy prey, got an animal instinct, a soldier instinct, rescues everyone on the Orient Express by telling the soldier that his command is, his post is over, his command is over, his tour of duty is over. And that's it. Everybody gets off the Orient Express. That was it in a nutshell. I've been trying to be even shorter than normal because I want to get into this conversation.
I'm very impressed. That's probably the fastest I've ever heard you recap an episode.
Yeah, wait till I get into some of the fun 66 second stuff later on in this episode. You'll hate me or love me. I'm not sure yet. First and foremost, and this is me, I'm just going to hop right in with some thoughts. I know Stephen tweeted some interesting things at me that I'm going to kind of prod him to get into, but. I enjoyed this. I'm just flat out saying I enjoyed this episode. It was kind of back to the return of the one-off fun Doctor Who kind of scary episodes that that in past seasons that we've kind of come to love. The monster of the week type of thing didn't have a super tie into the entire heaven and hell thing or the afterlife thing that we've been dealing with. The only thing I didn't quite get was, or I don't know if I didn't quite appreciate it or I didn't think it was fully flushed out, was we end last week on a cliffhanger, or the week prior, The Caretaker, on a cliffhanger. I'm sorry, to Kill the Moon? On a cliffhanger with Clara absolutely disgusted with the Doctor and basically telling him off and saying, I never want to do anything with you again, even though Danny tells her that, hey, if you are mad at someone, that usually means that you're going to, you can't rid of them that quickly. And here she is back on a journey with the Doctor almost as if nothing happened on their kind of their farewell, last kiss goodnight journey. And I don't know how that sat with anybody else, but I found that a bit of an issue. It just didn't quite fit, thematically to me.
I kind of felt the same way at first. Mm-hmm. I think as the episode or the first 15 minutes in particular wore on, they did clarify it that this was the final hurrah that, you could tell she was smiling but not happy. Mm-hmm. And very, huge props to Jenna Coleman for, being able to communicate that. And it became obvious that she was like, just tolerating this and, as the episode progressed, obviously there were ups and downs, but you started to see it more and more, the sense of wonder come back and the thrill and, the doubts in her head with regards to she even want to walk away. So, I like I said, I felt the same way, but it soon dissipated.
Yeah, I went into this expecting actually a Clara-free episode. And that is exactly what they wanted me to think based on the promos and the next time and all that. She was nowhere to be found in any of those.
I thought that part particularly was clever. I thought the promos was smart, like the way that they handled that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I have no complaints about it. I went in expecting almost like a midnight style episode, right?
Sure.
Doctor on train or adventure or whatever, and she's whatever. so I was kind of irritated at first too, like, you know, been confused. But I actually thought they played it off pretty well. they referenced it a lot. They mentioned that weeks had gone by since she had seen them.
Yeah,
or had seen each other. So, you know, she had been stewing. And I'm sure we've all been there where you're kind of mad for a while and then once you kind of sit and think on it and whatever.
Oh, no, I'm sure she kind of... That's my whole deal, Sean.
So, I mean, imagine how, like, you know, astronomically bigger that must be when you're dealing with something like, you know, an alien time traveler, right? And then by the end of the episode, which I thought was very well done, we kind of see that she is this addict,
right.
Kind of like him. And this is something we can get into more, but to the point where she's lying. Like, and I thought that was really well done. So, yeah, started frustrated, but I thought it all came together, like Marcus said, the first 15 minutes, and then especially by the end. And I really like what it's set up moving forward, because I think there's going to be some real ramifications from that. And I thought it's been really well done.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I can't disagree with any of that. I kind of liked the episode. I mean, for my money, I thought it actually for an episode that was supposedly going to be taking, you know, after such an important thing happened with Claire in the previous episode, I thought it was a little bit strange that they locked her into a freezer for like 90% of it. But I liked the what was it? Gus, call me Gus.
Yeah.
I thought he was pretty good, although it kind of doesn't go anywhere with him. He's just like, because all that stuff gets like handled as like, well, you know, sometime in the future, this is probably going to come back again, or maybe Gus is working with that lady, or who knows.
No, but, it's a Moffitism, right? He puts this character out there that could be very cool or something that could be very neat, and we never see them again.
Yeah, I mean, possibly.
Dream Lord, anybody?
Yes,
Dream
right? Lord,
yeah, fair enough.
Although I am of the belief that this was done purposefully, whether or not it's paid off this season or further down the Moffat line. Too many references to Gus, too many, you know, references to him having the TARDIS phone number and trying to get the Doctor on there for a long time. I don't know if we're supposed to believe that, you know, the call he got, you know, back when he was 11 was similar or not, but... I would be, I guess not super surprised given it is Moffat, but I'd be relatively surprised if this was the last we heard of Gus, whether or not Gus is its own thing or tied into some other big, you know, myth overall series.
My thought about it was consistently kind of like, for some reason, it just stuck in my head that like, what if this is like Madame Carabraxis? You know, maybe like eventually we know she's going to have a lot of regrets, but like, what is it about her that have made the Doctor, like, you know, for as many people as the Doctor has ever encountered and like said, you know, and killed for that matter, he gives her a second chance. He doesn't like force her to stay behind and get burned alive or anything like that. So maybe there's something special about her that we don't know yet. And like, you know, a pretty decent replacement for clones would, you know, be robots, and she would have the money to pull this stuff off. Eventually we know that she becomes a good guy, or at least becomes repentant for what she's done. But, he says, like, you're going to have so many regrets. And so he seems to me like he kind of knew her in some way. So maybe she's going to become, like, a recurring villain. Like, I kind of hoped that Dinosaurs on a Spaceship guy would become – I forget his name, the guy, the whatever villain that was. But I kind of hoped that that would be a recurring character. And Doctor Who definitely has recurring characters. We have, you know, Strax and, you know, Madame Vastra's crew. But we don't have a lot of recurring villains outside of, like – forces of evil, like the Daleks or the Cybermen. Like having an actual face on a recurring villain that isn't the Master might be kind of interesting, in my opinion.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Who are we talking about here? I missed
Madame
the name.
Madame Carabraxis.
Madame Carabraxis. Okay.
The Time Heist Bank Lady.
Oh yes. Okay. Right. Sorry.
I mean, she seems kind of like a one-off character, but like, it would not shock me, I guess, if it turned out to be her behind this whole thing, because, like, you know, a character with a lot of money and resources that could do something like this, like, she fits the bill anyway.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know. I felt like the end of her episode kind of made it feel like an open and shut, but of course, with this show, you never know. It's also, in the past, brought in people that have, they've hinted that they have tons and tons of history with the Doctor that we never see.
Yeah.
Which doesn't always go over so well. My mind goes to the woman in Smith's final episode, who knew all about the Doctor and the TARDIS and all this other stuff. So, you know, it definitely was open to the possibility that Gus could be a one-off, but I hope not. I thought it was a very compelling mystery.
If Gus does come back, I'm kind of hoping that it ties into the episode. You know, we've seen the bad guys in the last episode of the season. Mm-hmm. There's set pictures everywhere. We know what they're made of. And seeing as this Gus thing kind of like an AI as opposed to human, I'm just wondering if that's a device for bringing those not mentioned and spoilery for people who haven't seen the set pics.
Yeah, it's like me.
you can't miss the set pictures. They've been everywhere. So I won't spoil it for you. If you want to put your fingers in your ear.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
Steve manages to avoid things that the entire world has seen. I don't get it. I've never been able to understand it.
I'm quick on the draw. I'm quick on the pop-up blockers. I don't know. Go ahead and tell me, though. I really don't mind.
Well, don't watch that music video that's going around, because a lot of stuff from the rest of the season's in that, too. The Foxes video.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Foxes. Yeah, yeah.
So Steve, if you want to keep your innocence here, don't watch it.
We'll leave it and let people watch it. But, I think, you know, if this character is coming back, it'll probably be close to the season finale. But we already know that, the Mitty is going to be around.
Yeah.
You know, again, I'm wondering how many different characters Moffat can pull in. I mean, this felt like a very un-Moffat-y episode, to be honest with you. Simply because it started off asking questions. It started answering the questions in the middle and carried on answering the questions to the very end.
As in, it didn't wasn't just a whole bunch of questions without any kind of answer whatsoever?
Exactly, and there was no MacGuffin. I mean, you know, it was down to, you know, there were, you know, obviously there were a lot of scientific types, most of them useless as a wet toilet, paper.
Yeah, but most of them didn't even talk.
Weren't most of them not even real?
I mean, like, a bunch of the passengers weren't, but even after the holograms went away, there were a whole bunch of them left on the train.
Oh, yeah. The window dressing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you have another theory of who Gus is. The engineer.
The engineer.
Oh, right. The engineer, yeah.
Frank Skinner character. Because he had a lot of information he pulled. He was very, very helpful.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know who you're talking about.
At the end of it, he was pottering around in the TARDIS. He was looking at the engines. He was getting some info and then refused to travel. Now,
Frank
is a hugely popular comedian in the UK. He could be prime for a comeback, in an episode or something, but I could see him and Gus. Because let's face it, who controls the train? Not the captain, the friggin' engineer.
The engineer, right, yeah.
So that could be... That could be Gus moving forward.
Yeah, I actually like that theory. I like the idea of, like, who, you know, like, I can just even picture it in my head right now, like the Dr. Capaldi just, like, screaming at somebody, like, who do you work for, something like that, and then he walks out from behind a curtain of some kind, because that is such a who thing to do.
That is who does number two work for?
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny you mention that, because now I'm trying to picture Capaldi doing that, and I feel like he would just be cold anger. You know, I don't see him yelling like Smith or Tennant would. Look at how he's just handled everything that's been thrown at him, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
Even when he was telling Pink to get out of his TARDIS and Pink's yelling in his face, he barely yelled, you know, compared to what he could have been doing. But I do want to see that scene. I do want to see him try to figure out who Gus is or what this whole big overarching thing is all about. And I do want to see those two actors go at it again. So I think that'd be brilliant. I mean, I love that theory, Marcus. I think that's...
Yeah, that's really
good. I think that's definitely potentially got some legs to it, so.
It's probably total bollocks, but there you go.
As we found on this show in particular in the past, some of our best theories are things that the show goes nowhere near.
Exactly.
And things that we would just lose our minds over, just it turns out to be nothing like that.
Rory being the master, I think, is one of our favorite.
Get the hell out of here. To this day, I hate that stupid... I mean, yeah, that's one of my...
Oh, boy. Oh, fun times on the podcast already, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Good to be back.
Yeah, welcome back, Sean. We actually didn't get a full recount of your thoughts on Kill the Moon and Caretaker. Just some kind of basic thoughts you had, but we'll get to that shortly. I found a lot of things interesting about this episode. The Doctor, especially now, Capaldi, and Sean, you and I kind of tweeted back and forth a little about this. Capaldi has, to me, really done an unbelievable job in this role. I mean, the last 2 to 3 episodes from Caretaker, Kill the Moon, and now Mummy and the Orient Express, I am in love with him. Well, his character, let's just say. I'm in love with this portrayal of Doctor Who, of just this. He's almost like he's being mean-hearted because he doesn't know any better, and he thinks he has to because he hasn't been told what a good doctor has to be. At the same time, his portrayal, his thought process works, and I look at it as if very Sherlockian, right? So he'll sit and he'll analyze something to death. He did that in Listen. He definitely does it here, where he starts to take a look at bits and pieces and come up with answers and kind of question his own ideas. And he definitely resolves issues a lot like, you know, what we've been led to believe that Sherlock does.
Mm.
I don't know. Did you guys pick up on that as well? Way more so than previous doctors.
I think he's still just an asshole. I honestly do. I have said before that I kind of don't like his characterization very much. Mm. And, you know, it's that we're celebrating, you know, we've got a million shows on TV right now where we can celebrate a bunch of emotionally or physically or both abusive type characters. You look at something like The Blacklist, which is probably the most garbage television show I've watched in a long, long time. And it's all about that. It's all about just here's how cool it is to be bad, how cool it is to be mean. Mm-hmm. And Doctor Who hasn't really been quite that bad. It hasn't really quite been that far just because of Clara's presence. But the fact that Clara is locked in a fucking freezer for 90% of this episode doesn't really give me to say that much. And you know, this is not something I really like to point out too often on. Just into anything, because I think Jenna Coleman is a fine actor in many, 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 many other ways, and that would obviously go before this, but that dress that she was wearing throughout this episode, Jenna Coleman was probably the most attractive person I've ever seen.
I totally agree. I was going to wait till the very end of the episode to say that, but she was, they really have been kind of, I don't want to, she's not a sex symbol, by any means not a sex symbol, but she's definitely hitting that, I don't want to say Hollywood stride that Amy Pond's character was hitting later on in the season or in their series, but it's almost like Clara now is really becoming her own, Jenna Coleman is really becoming her own actress away from, I think Doctor Who will catapult her into a career away from away from Doctor Who, I should say.
The only reason I bring that up specifically is because she's just locked in this in a room for the entire mm-hmm. episode instead of as a part of the action. And I think it was a squandering of her character, but and secondary to that, I think it was also just a squander of that appearance in that dress, because holy crap.
No complaints.
You want to throw in pajama compliments while you're at it, Steve?
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, the pajamas were all right. You know, I don't know. I could do with a little.
I will agree on the appearance. I don't think I agree with the squandering of the character in the room, because it's not like she just sat on a box and moped for a half
That's
hour.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, she was having some fantastic back and forth with the other character whose name escapes me.
It was like an inner monologue, right? She was in this room and she was...
Yeah, but yeah, it's and it was the doctor, right? Yeah. They were bouncing stuff back and forth about her, the other character, and her relationship with her grandmother, and then she was helping Clara kind of figure out how she felt about the doctor and working through that complex emotional arc. And then I thought it was supremely well done, and I think she remains on a roll. She is the highlight of this season for sure. As great as Capaldi is, she is right up there. And I think it's a testament to her abilities and her, growth as a character that she did sit in a room with just one other character for, half the episode. And it was fun. It was really well done, I thought. Mm-hmm. Especially when the doctor kind of goes, it just was like, hey, listen, she's probably going to die. You need to lie to her to get her out here.
Yeah.
And, you know, just with her reactions to that alone, you know, Jenna Coleman, I thought, knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I think it would be a huge shame if she leaves at Christmas. Yep. I'd like to see her more season with Capaldi, because their dynamic is always, you know, it's all over the place, but in a good way. But she is definitely a steady influence. And while he is this off-the-wall kind of, you know, multi-faced schizophrenic doctor, she's the grounding influence more than I think anybody ever has, because this time he needs a grounding influence. And if she stays one more season and we could see perhaps, you know, Capaldi's character settle down into some form of consistency, I think that would be really cool, because, yeah, she carries every scene that she's in now. I mean, that's no mean feat against somebody like Capaldi, who when we started off, it's like, he can just waggle his eyebrows and he's fantastic. And he still is fantastic. But when she's there with him now, I mean, he is... You know, he knows he can take a step back when it's needed and just lets her run with it. And she just does such a good job.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Fair enough.
Agreed 100%.
You know, and
there's nothing. Sorry, Dolly, real quick. I know that there's a lot of speculation. I think, Mark, maybe you mentioned this before the call, or maybe you mentioned it last week, Marcus, but there's no confirmation on anything coming beyond Christmas.
Yep.
There's no confirmation on the Christmas. There's no confirmation she's leaving. There's no confirmation on anything on next season. And I don't remember exactly how it was handled, but I feel like we got the announcement that she was replacing the Ponds before the season was over.
Yeah, we did.
We knew Amy and Rory were leaving, I think, well before.
We knew that before the season started.
Not to say that it wouldn't be a surprise now, but because they could totally go down that route. But I just want to say, like, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a little bit of misinformation out there, too, and that she is sticking around. I really hope she's sticking around. I think the show has just been elevated so much, really just with the acting alone this season, to say nothing about the other stuff.
You know, my fear is that if she does happen to leave, you know, at the end of this season, that can only happen if Capaldi's version of the Doctor changes and becomes a more – I hate to say becomes a more likable character, but that's what it would take, right? Because she – and I mentioned this before. She's – and Mark has kind of touched on it too. She's the yin to his yang, right? So as negative as he is, as aggressive as he is, as uncaring about humanity as he often is – I mean, he even says it this episode a couple times where, you know, he kind of talks about humans as being almost like pests. You know, she's the opposite. She's the caring one. She's starting a relationship. She's balancing, you know, time traveling with love and caring and stuff. And so I think in order for – if she does leave, in order for the show to kind of continue on the path, either they would have to find someone who's just as likable and has the same kind of character traits as Clara, which I don't want. You know, you want her to be singular, or the Doctor would have to change in kind of, I don't want to say profound ways, but his character arc would definitely need to change.
Yeah, I mean, part of, I think, what makes Coleman work so well right now is that she was, like, it was kind of the exact opposite of Capaldi. It was like, we were so down on her come, like, Matt Smith era. It was just because she's so boring. Like, her character that was written was so boring.
I look back on that now, and it just was – it's so funny.
Yeah. It's great.
The 180, and it's fantastic, but we were so
like, that opinion is quaint at this point, like, in comparison. It's ridiculous. But I think part of what makes her so likable, it's like, you know, part of why I enjoy Coleman's performance every week is because on the strength of her performance, we were, like, eventually able to get the kind of Coleman that we have now, the kind of Claire that we have now. Like, she overcame that, and that alone is just super enjoyable.
Yep, definitely agree.
I'll tell you, it's one thing Moffat can laugh about, you know, of all the criticism he gets, and much of it is well-deserved. He really did the 180 that we didn't think he was capable of with Clara.
And we found a star. Like,
that whole character has just been so redeemed in my eyes, you know?
Yeah, she's very likable.
How much of that is actually down to Moffat, though?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking the same thing.
First couple of episodes of this season, I mean, she, you know, her ability has come through, and I think the episodes that Moffat hasn't written or that he's only had a small imprint on have been the ones where she's come through much, much better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, sorry to interrupt.
I'm just saying, I still think he is not been doing, doing well with regards to writing female characters. And perhaps he can't. I mean, if you ever watch Coupling, it was an amusing comedy, but everybody was kind of stereotypical in there, especially the girls. And then you look at Sherlock, and the only three female characters that have been in there are, again, kind of, you know, it's the level of the actress cast that brings it up, because they're kind of bare bones.
Sure.
So maybe Mr. Moffat's, you know, that's not one of his skill sets, and perhaps he has been smart in that he's packed in a bunch of additional writers this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll continue to see when we get to the season finale and whatever the Christmas special is, how he handles it. Because, you know, again, the if you go back to the 50th anniversary, the which he wrote, the Rose Tyler thing as the, you know, as the ultimate
moment. Yeah.
Not really that, you know, not that memorable. I mean, you know, again, Billie Piper, I do have a loathing for her, unfortunately, as an actress. But I don't think that she really, you know, she felt anything more. Perhaps that's what it was. She was supposed to be a flat as a pancake AI. But I don't think that's in Moffat's wheelhouse. I don't think it's his skill set, and I don't think he should take that much credit beyond casting somebody like Jenna Coleman, who has come alive opposite Capaldi.
Yeah. Sure, and I think there's a number of variables in play, for sure. But I do think that some of that does need to go to Moffat, for better or for worse. You know, he still is the showrunner. He gets a lot of flack when things go bad, especially the things that are just his name. But he does, you know, at least some of the peripheral credit has to go to him. And it's like you said, whether or not, you know, it all goes to shite at the end with the Christmas special or the end of the season, and we see, you know, Moffat really can't wrap anything up or whatever, you know, then like we've said pretty much every week, we're ready to be disappointed and prepared for that. Right. But, you know, I don't know. You know, he brought her on. He brought on a new companion heading into the 50th, and she was so shortchanged as a character because she was literally just a plot device to get everything moving to that. You know, basically 5 of 6 episodes were, you know, setting up why she jumps into his time stream, right? Mm-hmm. And then everything there was building to the 50th, and now we have this contained arc. You know, that is all done. That is all in the past. It hasn't even been referenced. I mean, like, you know, for the most part anyway, no Gallifrey, no 50th stuff, no shenanigans, nothing. And now we see this growth and this different character and this range of the actress and all this other stuff when they actually have, you know, something else to go towards and to have this character, like you're saying, bouncing off the doctor, this mad, quote-unquote, darker doctor. So, I don't know. I agree with you. I think there's a weakness there in Moffat's writing when it comes to female characters. But, you know, I also think, just devil's advocate wise, he is still a showrunner. He still makes final decisions. He edits scripts. He adds things here and there. You know, he's got the overall story mapped out. I do think some of the credit does have to go to him. Whether or not it's a lot is the debate. But
I think there's a middle ground here. I mean, I think it's just like a matter of, you know, at one point we had Clara. She was not an interesting character, but Jenna Coleman, even with the little bit of work that she, you know, the little bit that she had to work with, like, she was still fantastic. So at some point, somebody must have at least said to Moffat, like, or whether it was her or whether it was somebody just related to the project or whatever, somebody must have said, like, you have to give her something better to do. Mm-hmm. You have to give her more. She has to be more than this, because you can't squander this actor. You can't squander her talents like that.
Maybe.
Well, I think it again goes back to the fact that, you know, he's not written a huge amount. And look, I understand what the showrunner does. He creates the arc, gives out the titles, and, you know, some outlays. But I think it's the other writers who've come in who filled in those gaps. I mean, for her first season, she was a plot device to get to, you know, get to the 50th, which was the most. I mean, up till the 50th, it was all over the place. We all know that. But then the other thing was she was infatuated with the doctor.
Yeah.
And now the doctor that she isn't infatuated with, now the characters are sort of like unleashed and has grown, because when Moffat wrote most of last year, he had her as the love interest, and she's the one who's evolved beyond that. And I think it's a happy accident, but I don't think, you know, much credit needs to really go to Moffat above and beyond his initial stuff of casting her and, you know, perhaps making the very wise decision to step back.
Could be.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's just one of the fun things to debate. I mean, I think we're all just happy that it's so good. I mean, I was reading a thread somewhere else that you know, people were debating whether or not this was one of the better or greatest string of uninterrupted Who episodes in recent memory. And there were some pretty compelling points in there about how these episodes have just been pretty phenomenal one after another.
I mean, you know, it's not like they've been, you say in recent memory, it's not like they've had a high bar to clear, but at the same time, you know, they've been pretty good, you know?
Sure. Well, that depends on the parameters for your argument too, right? But I'm just so happy about it. And I was thinking about it earlier when we were theorizing last year. You know, we heard, oh, Capaldi's going to be a Doctor Doctor, and what's that going to mean and all that stuff. And then we were kind of leery in the beginning, and we had some reservations at the beginning of the season and all that. But, I mean, with this and Kill the Moon and, and Listen, I know Listen is controversial, but pretty much everything this season I've either really liked or just loved. And I'm just so happy with Capaldi and the debate on, you know, whether or not he's a jerk or an a-hole, or, you know, whether or not he's just alien. And this is kind of him channeling previous doctors who were also really alien and kind of didn't even realize they were being, you know, like they were brushing off people and not being emotional and stuff like that. You know, he had a great line at the end of the episode where Clara basically, you know, hints that he really does care underneath it all, or something like that. He is emotional. And he basically says, is it easier for you to believe that? Like, I could pretend if you want to believe that. And in spite of all that, in spite of saving people, being the doctor, being all that, he still kind of rebuffs this notion that he's this warm, fuzzy kind of old man, you know, looking out for everybody. It was just so well done.
I'm just glad this season is now batting above 50.
Yeah.
Above 500.
500. Because, 50 is really low.
Yeah. Well, you know, after the first four episodes, there were, you know, one that I quite liked, which is The Robot of Sherwood, and one I kind of liked, which is Into the Dalek. But the first episode was really quite mediocre. And, you know, Listen, I just think was the biggest case of blue balls, as I've said. But since then, it really has stepped up. And like I said, it's been noticeable because it's been less and less Moffat. And this is what a good showrunner could do, because it frees him to write the good stuff, because we know what he can do when he's focused. And I'm hoping that the season finale and the Christmas special, the ones that he's written, and perhaps the next, the one building up into that, are, you know, his 50th anniversary levels.
Right. Yeah.
That more, because if he can manage and let people, you know, go off and write some great stuff, the second half, or as we cross into the second half, it's picked up. And next week's episode, or this week's episode, looks really, really freaky.
Yeah, Flatline. Yep.
I just want to finish that.
Sure.
This, you know, the last two have been two of my favorite Doctor Who episodes for a while. You know, taking out the 50th anniversary, they're definitely two of my favorites, because they do harken again to a lot of that Tom Baker stuff. But they also, you know, they also have a bit of silly adventure, and I find it interesting that. I've seen a couple of threads where people are talking about the last two, saying that they're the suckiest Doctor Who's ever. And it's interesting that there's a younger generation of 20-somethings. So I mean, and I know some of you are 20-somethings, but
yeah, one of us
one
is
of
certainly
you. One of them is.
Yeah. I'm technically a 20-something.
Oh, you are? Okay, well, there you go.
Don't rush me into this old age.
Stuff I've seen has been, you know, the sort of like, you know, early mid-20s guys and girls, you know, Listen was fantastic, and, you know, Kill the Moon and Mummy and the Orient Express were just like crap. And I am totally different. I think it might be a generational thing. I think it might be because I remember the Tom Baker stuff, and I remember a lot of the original stuff, and that Doctor Who has got to have that balance, because, you know, in essence, said this before and I'll say it again, still a kid show.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, yeah.
It's still a kid show, and that's the, you know, the demographic is growing, and the, you know, the people are older watching because they started watching at a younger age, and now there's 20-somethings coming in. But dark and depressing, or, you know, continually giving us blue balls and expecting us to fill in the blanks week after week, is just, you know, that's not satisfying for me. Not when it's week after week after week after week.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I think this episode was definitely like I don't know if a shoe is necessarily the right word. It doesn't necessarily eschew all that stuff, but it was definitely not a super light episode. You know, it wasn't like a kiddie episode of it by any means. Like, and I, the only thing being like, well, you know, there's always in Doctor Who, there's always that. I think back to like family or human nature and family blood, and it's just like that is such a creepy, such a well written, such an amazing two parter to me. And yet we have these like giant scarecrow or these like walking scarecrow monsters because you have to have the things that like somebody somewhere at the BBC said like, okay, we need to try and sell these as a thing that is scary for the kids because they might not get the like emotional horror that is going on here. Also, hey, if they're popular, maybe we can sell a toy of this, you know? You know, like that. I'm seeing that more and more these days, like seeing the parts where it's just like, oh, right, they threw in a monster into this episode because they needed to, because somebody somewhere is thinking like, well, we could probably sell this to some kids somewhere. And like as somebody who spends quite a lot of time in a comic book shop, I can tell you that they are not at all scrupulous about the kinds of things that they will make into a toy. The latest series, I think series 3 of the Titan Doctor Who minifigs, there is they're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. One of them is the Crimson Horror Matt Smith Doctor, so it's just a regular Matt Smith figure, but they've painted him red and made his face look like open, like he's in the Crimson Horror. It's gotten bad, you guys.
I believe that, but you know, it's kind of curious. I don't know if you guys saw the writer for this episode and the last episode was on Reddit and did an AMA. And it sounded like from what I understand, they pitch ideas and then Moffat and the team, you know, either say no thanks or bring them on, but then help them tweak it for the overall season arc and stuff like that and make things better and all that. My guess is that this enemy and this monster, which by the way, if I was a kid, I would be terrified of. Right. I thought The Mummy was done brilliantly this week, and it was phenomenal. But I think this was writer pitched, and it raises an interesting point. I am curious what comes from like BBC and like that idea for general merchandising outside of like the main characters, and then what comes in from writers in terms of ideas, what they want to tell, like with the moon or with the mummy or whatever, that then the BBC can kind of see afterwards that they own, and then they can license out and merchandise and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the latter, they get the stories together first, to be honest with you, because if you look at it, I mean, it's not like a lot of American shows and movies where you see the entire merchandise line at New York Toy Fair.
Right.
Comes out. In fact, I mean, a lot of it comes out after the fact by as much as a couple of months. I mean, the whole Crimson, the Crimson one you're talking about, I mean, that again, is a good 18 months old. Even though they've just, you know, slapped a bit of red paint on the Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And look, there's been some epic fails. I mean, the goo one, which is basically a bucket of goo with the Doctor's broken bits of Matt Smith, all sort of like poking out of it from the episode where the two-parter where they had the clone, the living flesh.
Okay, the rebel flesh, got it.
Rebel flesh.
But I mean, I think on the whole, they do a lot better job, I think, than a lot of other places. Ironically, I mean, you know, I've been to the Doctor Who exhibition, and the merchandising there is not what you'd expect. I mean, they don't have the figures there; they don't have that huge collection. They used to have it when it was the exhibition had it. Now it's the experience, and they don't seem to have a great thing, but I think it's because they want to get them out mass market and get them out into Tesco's and stuff like that. But yeah, we're starting to see more and more stuff. I mean, I saw a huge, two end caps for Doctor Who in Barnes & Noble today.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're all over the place at Barnes & Noble. Yeah.
Good. I mean, the series is seeing it's unprecedentedly popular in the States, so...
Yeah, I've been picking up the comic books as well, and they're beautifully illustrated. Yeah, haven't gotten into reading them yet. Yeah, the covers are great.
No, but the interiors? How are the interiors?
The interiors hold up very well. I'll get into that in a future episode for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of getting into episodes,
yeah,
yeah.
I don't know if we've gone too deep into what like our favorite parts of this one. I know we did the recap, and I know we've talked a lot about the overarching.
Here I got
stuff.
so All right. Well, let's do it a little bit differently.
You have something about 66 seconds, don't you?
Yes. So instead of just spending time talking and talking and talking, let's give each of us 66 seconds to talk about our favorite parts of this episode. I'm going to time you, and I'm going to start with Sean, because you were the one that brought it up. So you have 66 seconds before the mummy gets you, starting now.
Okay. Well, like I said earlier, the intro threw me for a loop, but I really liked how they kind of closed that out. I thought it was really, I thought it, aesthetically it was fantastic. I love the kind of throwback to like the Roaring Twenties kind of style of everything. All the explanations were great. Capaldi was fantastic. Of course, as always, we talked a lot about how him and Clara, his doctor and Clara, kind of got on, and she kind of stole the show as usual with every scene she was in. Oh, don't show me the timer. Come on.
The doctor's like coming for you. The mummy's coming for you.
For those, oh, God. Yeah, the mummy was brilliant. I love the kind of the revelation of what it was, even though it kind of confused me at first. I had to pay attention to that a second time, but that was great. And again, just the doctor, he's so callous, but it's like an alien way, and it's not in like a – I refuse to believe it's in an I don't care way, but in this alien way, and it's just like, well, you're dead anyway. And just again, just top notch dialogue and just so well done. It was
The mummy got you. That was the worst scream.
That was great.
All right. Oh, Steven, while you're talking. All right, go.
Okay, so during this episode, I would just want to say right off the bat that I thought it was a little bit strange that Capaldi and Clara weren't obviously in a big, huge argument mode with each other right at the beginning. But after that ended, then we got to see them like working together. Clara getting locked in a closet, kind of sucked a little bit, but whatever. She got to wear that cool dress, and oh my God, that was great. Capaldi, I don't know about the pajamas, but that suit, he was definitely wearing that suit. Okay, I want to point out that the Silver Fox is still, swinging around here. Anyway, no, I've lost the clock. Okay, there it is. So the mummy was a pretty interesting villain. The idea of just dying out of nowhere and not being able to prove it to anyone else is kind of a scary idea. I like the idea of just having like Murder on the Orient Express. It seems like some kind of weird sort of like, we've had a flying Titanic before, why not have a flying train? That's, again, once again, going back to the well on the Doctor Who thing, I think that's it's impossible that that's just a coincidence at this point. The mummy, the revelation of how they beat it at the end, I thought was actually pretty smart and pretty interesting, although the fact that he actually salutes in the typical human way of saluting is a little bit dumb. But overall, the Gus is cool.
Oh, you survived. You absolutely survived by 1.5 seconds of the, the mummy getting it. All right.
We surrender!
We surrender. Marcus, are you ready?
Yeah.
Go.
I liked it.
I didn't like to add anything.
Look, it was smart when it needed to be smart. It had some complex plot, character points, that with some baiting and switching. I liked that it was a one and done with regards to the mummy soldier. The death count again was freaking huge for a Doctor Who. I just thought it was another good episode. I think ever since we had the one where we went to the school directly after it's been on a roll. Three really good episodes. Clara's been the outstanding one. The fact that this was a more intimate, enclosed environment also really, really worked. And I would love to know what the Doctor was drawing on the sand when he dropped, when Clara woke up.
Great points, and you survived by 7 or 8 seconds. Beautiful. All right, and my turn.
There, Dolly. And Marcus, remind me, I want to come back to that.
Yeah. All right. And here we go. All right, so let me line this up. Really enjoyed the episode. Thought it was a lot of fun. I love the one-and-done style of it. I'm still a little bummed, again, that they don't do a lot of great setup of episode to episode. Like I said, last time we had this big, giant falling out between Clara and the Doctor, and this episode they kind of brushed it off as if nothing happened. I wish that at least they would have a webisode or something that could bridge the two. Again, Clara, wow, she was absolutely stunning this episode. Beautiful hair and makeup, wonderful dress, wonderful clothing design. Yeah, Steven, you were right, the Silver Fox still has it. Amazing set design. And again, it just gorgeous design. The train looked wonderful. The Orient Express looked fantastic. The characters, just the wonderful kind of 1800s, early 1900s style. Beautifully articulated everything all through that through that kind of art direction aspect. And then finally, I have one. Tip my tongue. What am I trying to say? I can't. Oh, my God. I got seconds left. What am I trying to say? Oh, yeah, the salute, because Danny Pink is a soldier, and it's the first time that he actually acknowledged another soldier. Thank you.
Ah!
Wow. He still killed me. But, yeah, there you go. So
I think my scream was better.
I think your scream was better than mine, yeah.
Listeners, please rate our screams on on the Facebook group on a scale of 1 to 5.
Rate us on Google Plus.
Rate us on Google Plus. Yeah, the hot new social network that's sweeping the nation now that Twitter is unfucking usable.
Oh God.
Okay, Sean, you wanted to go back to, really quickly to the sand and the kind of the end.
Yeah, and then you said something, but now I forgot what you said that I wanted to follow up on.
The Danny Pink, the soldier.
No. Oh well. Anyway, the drawing
Silver Fox.
And the Silver Fox.
Do you think we're gonna get some payoff to all these drawings by the end of the season? His chalkboard and the sand and just.
Yeah, when he was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., they had to use Kree blood to bring him back to life so that he could become director.
Hold on, dude, you totally ruined all of Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I haven't watched more than 2 episodes of it. Of the first season.
I imagine there's probably a pretty good chance that a lot of listeners haven't either.
Well, that's their fault. It's been, like, season 2 is like 4 episodes in now. Like, come on.
There are a lot of people that wait until shows can be, you know, all watched in a chunk. Either way, dude, you got to spoiler tag that shit.
Yeah. Man,
Hulu Plus, I know you're listening to us right now. Please just give us a sponsorship so that we can give everybody a Hulu Plus subscription so they can watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. faster and not, like, have to worry about spoilers from 18 months ago.
I don't know. Maybe Ali can, like, edit in white noise or something for the last time.
Yeah. I'm totally going to remember doing that.
Yep, sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Anyway, back to Who, and ignoring Steven's insanely shitty spoilers for another show. I don't know. I just feel like they keep showing this in the background, and he keeps working this stuff out, and I'm just curious, you know, whether or not it's going to turn out to be a thing, or whether or not this is just a doctor that's, you know, likes to do equations and shit.
I think it's him figuring things out. He's very Sherlockian. Right, he's trying to loves to figure things out. I think that you know, it's just part of his character. I don't think there's anything else beyond that, personally.
All right. Well, some people, you know, some people are speculating that maybe it ties into his appearance. You know, either the 50th or it could tie in down the road if you know they ever want to go back to the Gallifrey stuff. Maybe he's trying to figure out how to find it.
Got it. How weird is it that we haven't seen a single like mention of Gallifrey post 50th?
What if Missy is from Gallifrey? I'm starting to think about that as being more of a possibility.
I'm torn. On the one hand, I really thought we would at least get subtle hints towards that. Which again, I guess the drawings could be the subtlest of subtle.
Promised Land is Gallifrey? There you guys go. Threw it out there. Boom.
Yeah.
Gallifrey, the S.H.I.E.L.D. hell carrier, Gallifrey.
I think I'd be disappointed. Gallifrey. I think at this point I would be disappointed if she, Missy, or the Promised Land to have a nether sphere wound up being Gallifrey.
Yes, I think I would too. That doesn't fit to me.
So, and I have no problem. You know, they have years of Who ahead of them. You know, if they want to not go back to that well for a while. I can't say it left the best taste in my mouth when they ended Smith's arc the way they did anyway. But I at the same time, I'm surprised that they haven't at least brought it up in passing. So,
I just think it's weird. I don't necessarily think they need to. I just think it's very strange.
I'm conflicted, boys. I don't know how to feel.
You know what's not conflicted? Our opinions on this episode. It sounds like this is like the first one that none of us on an episode has actually like just absolutely hated.
Not all like last week's?
What was last week's again? I forget.
Kill the Moon.
I liked Kill the Moon. I thought that the ending was a little bit flat, which I went into. But like, yeah, that's also true. Right. Like, yeah, like you guys have said that. I guess it's more like we haven't had like a really bad thing to say about the show, like other than not having enough. I mean, I pointed out that I wish there was more Clara in it, just because I just think she's my favorite part of the show.
Sure. I think I brought this up in the past too. We're kind of like battered housewives, where we're like. We're so afraid of like we're afraid to be happy because we're still afraid that the other shoe is going to drop, And at the end, we're all just going to be crushed. And then, well, like, on our final episode of the season, Marcus is just going to rant and tear up phone books and shit.
Oh, yeah. Like, no, Marcus, we want to talk about, like, a Holmesian affair. This all ends with Marcus, like, doing cocaine and shooting bullets into phone books in his room. It's like, oh, is this part of his creative process? No, he just watched the latest season of Doctor Who. He's just really, really upset about it.
You took that to a dark place.
Well, the joke was kind of dark. Yes.
What was that, Marcus?
No creative process here. Thank you very much.
A couple quick final notes before we give our rating and review of this episode and dive into just a couple quick comments from our readers and listeners. Some interesting little tidbits. Marcus, you mentioned Are You My Mummy, which is a reference to some of the episodes, the Ninth Doctor, I believe it was, Empty Child, Doctor Dances, that whole era.
And Jelly Babies.
Oh, and the Jelly Babies. Oh, the Jelly, yeah, Jelly Babies. So Jelly Babies, he gives it to the Professor Morehouse, I believe it is, and he kind of interrogates him a little bit. And
which, by the way, I found out was not in the script. Capaldi brought that up.
Really? Brilliant. Brilliant.
That was actually – it's crazy that we didn't mention that, because that is probably like my favorite thing that Capaldi has done on this show, since not just because it's a reference to something old, but it's just like a funny little thing. And like Capaldi is so light on funny little things that like I would love to see more stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then
you guys talked a little bit about how he's channeling doctors every week, right?
Yeah.
And whether or not that could be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, we from the beginning, we've all said that, like, you know, he looks a lot like Pertwee.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure, but no, but his, they have brought it up that, like, every week now there's specific stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Very, and it's a very Tom Baker-ish episode. Bakery. And finally, I'm reading Wikipedia, so much love to the fans who posted stuff on Wikipedia. Doctor mentions a mysterious force which enticed him to the Orient Express and said even phoned the TARDIS once.
Yep.
Which was, I think it was the Big Bang episode when Matt Smith said, he answered the TARDIS phone and says, an Egyptian goddess loose on the Orient Express in space. So, yeah. Another...
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So there's
that's what I was referring to earlier when we brought it up with the Smith episode. With the
I completely didn't remember it at all. So, yeah, like, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
There, again, yeah, there, and we mentioned earlier, does Moffat ever come back to these kinds of things? He might, in little tiny ways, come back to certain elements, but never, again, to me, it just never seems like he actually flushes things out.
I do kind of like that kind of gives you the idea of, you know, it took because the doctor can live for, you know, thousands of years or whatever. It took him like this long to finally get around to dealing with the mummy on the Orient Express, because it doesn't matter because he can just time travel over there. It's like such a nice little nod to that whole. But so often it seems like, especially lately, time travel either gets used as like some kind of convenient way to make everything crazy at the end of a season, or as just a way to get around. And like, they don't actually like do much fun stuff with time travel anymore. Like, it's just for convenience all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's nice.
Well, let's get ready to give our final reviews, gentlemen. I think it's about that time. We've been babbling for about an hour now. do our final reviews and get into some fan feedback. So, out of 5 mummies, Marcus, how many mummies do you give this episode?
4.5 badly wrapped mummies.
Steven, how many mummies?
I'm going to say 4.27 juicy mummies.
Wow. All right. I'm going to give this a flat 4 mummies. Out of 5. Sean?
4.5.
4.5. All right. Good. So it's definitely trending upward. And I think the last few episodes of Doctor Who, as we mentioned, Caretaker, Kill the Moon, Mummy and the Orient Express, even those of us that liked some, you know, a couple of the previous episodes, really trending upward. And it's great to see. Couple quick comments that we had both on Twitter and on our Facebook page. Again, got to give giant props as usual to our great fan Annalie. Sorry, pronounce it wrong every time, but I still pronounce it better than Steven and Sean do. she wrote this beautiful piece, or a great piece on our Facebook page, There's just so much in there. Instead of me reading everything, I'll kind of hit a couple quick little points. She mentions that the doctor, obviously the doctor's being harsh with people, with humans, and wonders if that's coming from the new having that regeneration cycle come with a ton of baggage. Obviously, and I think what she's getting at might be that, and I'm totally throwing thoughts and words in your mouth there, Annalie, but the doctor had just seen the Time War, right? He just saw the Daleks, and he saw everything kind of crash around him and then be rebuilt, and then was trapped on a planet. I don't want to say trapped on a planet, but was on a planet for how many hundred years? Several hundred years? 800 years? 900 years on a planet? Protecting the survivors there. He's just been worn. So this regeneration obviously has these couple thousand years of all this baggage all at once. So, I guess I can kind of see where the doctor's a little more harsh than the past. And then she also brings up a good point. She was hoping that the last episode, Kill the Moon, she's hoping for a really big payoff. I mean, it's beginning to annoy her a little bit because it's we're all very fascinated by it, she says. But Missy isn't anything until she's still just kind of a super weird Jesus Mary Poppins to her, which I think all of us kind of I get that vibe as well. Even though Missy says that she's the doctor's girlfriend or love interest or something. So I'm wondering she wonders what all this is going to lead to. So again, great comments by Annalie, and I definitely check out the Facebook page. And then right on our own website on LoneInTardis.com, a lot of great comments there as well. On the last episode, just a quick one, Savior Prodigy just mentioned that loved the interaction between Doctor and Danny Pink on, I believe it was on The Caretaker. So I enjoyed that episode, the Doctor and Danny Pink, and I think it totally reflects on this episode, the mummy being a soldier and how the doctor reacts to the soldier and finally puts this notion of hating soldiers to rest and says, you know, your duty has been served. You can now relax. And the soldier finally relaxes. And I'm wondering if he's going to bring that into his relationship with Danny. So a couple of the comments there, which I thought were fairly prudent. Also finally John Kay, which is, at Dikenum, which is monkey backwards on Twitter, says the show continues its temperamental nature, but the spinner landed on hot. No promised land for the scientist or conductor, though. I'm sure they probably ended up there. We'll see them at the end of the season, more than likely. With that, and with apparently a big heavy wind that's blowing through the confines of everybody's offices where we're all recording from, I think that's it for this week. We have Flatline coming up this weekend. We'll be able to record, I believe, a little bit earlier next week. So
every time you think of you mentioned Flatline, I just can't stop thinking of that movie Flatliners, they would stop their hearts for like the high.
yep. I wonder if this episode is actually a spiritual sequel to that. No, it's not.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure Moffat was like, you know what really needs to make a comeback? Flatliners. Like that was a forgotten gem of cinema from the golden age.
With that said, you can find us definitely about on the interwebs at LonelyTardis.com. Find us on Twitter at LonelyTardis. And please rate and review us on iTunes. And follow the Lonely TARDIS Twitter account. Again, we have that contest. If we get to 500 followers, we will get, we got a cool prize there. Steven, have you met your goal yet of 1,000?
No.
You're inching up.
I finally breached 800 recently, which, what am I at? 807, which, I think it's been like 20 people jumped on with me, but I tweeted it out there saying that I would give away stuff. Like, I'm basically just at this point, I'll just probably give something away at the end of the season. We'll see if I make it to 1,000, if I don't, but I still feel like I should probably give something away to people because, it's not 1,000, which is what my goal really is, but, that's still pretty respectable, and who knows if it has anything at all to do with Doctor Who. I'm guessing not, because most of them are developers.
I will post it on the site this weekend, I believe, so it'll be good to get all these contests out in front of everybody else. You can find Steven at Steven Strum.
You can find me at Steven Strum, yes, S-T-E-V-E-N-S-T-R-O-M. You can also, actually, I've been streaming recently, yes. So you can find me on Twitch at Steven Strum. I've got two videos up now for The Evil Within. I'm hoping to shoot some more stuff, and I'm also doing some writing for Ars Technica this season, where I'll have a lot of reviews up. I'll have a Bayonetta 2 review up very, very soon.
Very cool, very cool. Sean, where can we find you?
Sorry, I was wondering if I should get in on this contest goodness. Jeez. Maybe I'll give away a sonic screwdriver or something. You can find me at Sean Norton, S-H-A-U-N-N-O-R-T-O-N.
The Big Sean.
The Big Sean. Before we get off the subject and announce Marcus's and I's accounts, I just wanted to bring up that the official 12th Doctor sonic screwdriver is the exact same as the 11th Doctor screwdriver, because I also went to Barnes & Noble and I've been poking around the Doctor Who area, and right next to each other they have the 11th Doctor sonic screwdriver and the 12th Doctor sonic screwdriver. They're the same toy, just different packaging. The same part, just different packaging. So it's kind of a bummer. I was really hoping that that we would have a brand new sonic screwdriver for Capaldi, but well,
maybe it'll happen eventually.
Not yet anyway. I mean,
that usually happens pretty quickly, though.
Sure, but I'm just saying that. I mean, it hasn't happened on the show, so that's why it's always been.
Marcus, where can we find you?
Same place I am every week.
Polishing a screwdriver.
Polishing a screwdriver.
Yeah, in polishing my screwdriver. you can find me at Annoyed Gamer, and yeah, I'm thinking we'll see a new screwdriver at Christmas.
And you can find me at Dolly Domovsky, and you can find me at Polished Screwdriver.
God, I can't stop now, because like Sean keeps laughing, and now I'm fucking laughing. I can't deal with this shit.
And he's just the most exasperated. It's like, yeah, you can find me here.
The fucking mummy. One day the fucking mummy's gonna come for Marcus, and he's just gonna be like, yeah, whatever, fuck you, mate. He's just gonna go back to reading Twitter. Man.
Thank you for that. That was fantastic.
And with that said, we'll see you guys next week on The Lonely TARDIS.
Christ.
Bye.
What the fuck is this show anymore?
Steven, the music. We need that music, Steven.
Oh, yeah.